Yukon River In-Season Salmon Management Teleconference Season. We greatly appreciate you taking the time to join us as we begin another important season of discussions surrounding the management and future of Yukon River salmon. My name is Serena Alstrom, Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association, and it is my pleasure to serve as your host throughout this teleconference season. These calls will be held every Tuesday from June through the end of August. Throughout the season, we will provide updates on Yukon River salmon run assessments, environmental conditions, research and monitoring efforts, and ongoing management activities. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to all the new participants joining us today. We also encourage young fishers to participate in these calls to learn, engage, and become involved in Yukon River fisheries issues and management. These teleconferences provide an important opportunity for people from across the Yukon River to share observations, concerns, and local conditions. We encourage fishermen, tribal representatives, researchers, managers, and community members to actively participate. Your knowledge and experience help build a broader understanding of the challenges facing our salmon and river communities. We'd also like to thank our funding partners, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and the Tana Chiefs Conference, for their continued support in making these calls possible. For many years, these teleconferences have served as a communication bridge between local users and fishery managers across the 2,200 miles of the Yukon River. As salmon declines and changing river conditions continue to affect our communities, the need for open communication remains critical. However, the challenges we face today require more than information sharing alone. They require collaboration, problem solving, and action. Our goal is to ensure these calls remain a platform for meaningful discussion, actionable feedback, and collaborative solutions that can be shared with management agencies, organizations, and decision makers. By working together, we can identify practical opportunities to improve fisheries management and support the long-term health of the Yukon River salmon. As we move through the 2026 season, I ask that all participants be respectful of one another. This is a space for constructive dialogue and shared learning. By listening to and supporting one another, we can foster productive conversations and benefit our fisheries and communities. Rely on your time, participation, and commitment to the Yukon River. The in-season subsistence salmon survey is currently underway. We thank the National Park Service and NOAA for funding the program this year. This year, the surveyors are using a digital app version of the program, and we hope to make it available to the public soon. We'll update you when it is ready to download from the App Store. We want to encourage fishers in the in-season survey communities to reach out to their local surveyor and share what they are seeing on the river. This program is a way for fishers to anonymously share their observations as well as their concerns or challenges with the managers and the rest of the river. The in-season survey communities include Alaknak, Mountain Village, Russian Mission, Marshall, Anvik, Huslia, Ruby, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. Just some housekeeping before we get started. Like always, please press *6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press *6 to mute and unmute. Background noise and conversations are disruptive to callers who are sharing important information. This week we'll be starting our community reporting from the headwaters in Canada. But before we get started, we'd like to ask if there is any media on the line, if you could please announce yourself. Do we have any of our government representatives or staff members on the call today?
Hey, Serena, this is Mike. This is Bert Fisher.
Okay, we'll let ladies go first.
Hi, Serena. This is Bert Fisher with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the Subsistence Division.
Okay, great. Thank you. Welcome, Brooke.
This is Mike Wood, Alaska Board of Fisheries.
Welcome, Mike.
Aaron Tiernan with the Alaska Department of Fishing Game, AYK Management Coordinator here in Anchorage. Good afternoon.
Welcome. We will proceed with getting the reports from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the Yukon Area Managers. Do we have any staff on the line?
Hi, Serena. This is Matt Olson, Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Fairbanks, Yukon River Fall Season Manager. I think we have Bonnie Borba on the line. I think she'll start with a fall assessment update.
Hey, good afternoon. You guys can hear me?
Yes, Bonnie, go ahead.
Okay. My name is Bonnie Borba. I'm the Yukon River Fall Season Research Biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I'm going to provide an initial fall season assessment. The summer chum salmon run was much improved over recent years, though well below the average run size of 1.9 million fish. And based on the relationship between the summer and fall chum salmon run sizes, the preseason run size projection through July 18th was estimated to be greater than 400,000 fall chum salmon. This is well below the average fall chum salmon run size of 940,000 fish. As with the summer chum salmon, the in-season fall chum salmon projection is above the preseason forecast, which is good news. Lower River Project switched to fall season assessment on July 16th for the Lower Yukon Test Fish and July 19th for Main Stem Yukon River Sonar at Pilot Station. The third stratum of chum salmon genetic samples from the Pilot Station Sonar Test Fishery from July 6th through July 18th is on the way to the lab for analysis. Look for those results in future ADF&G Yukon River daily updates. On average, the run is composed about 93% summer during this stratum, but we'll see when we get the actual results. Once the fall chum salmon enter the river, we will provide genetic stock assessment for the main components of three main fall stocks, the Upper Yukon U.S. stocks, the Canadian stocks, and the Tanana fall stocks. Escapement projects in the upper Yukon portion of the drainage within Alaska will be assessed with sonars operated on the Tjingjik and Shingjik rivers starting up around August 8th. And then Eagle's average transition date from Chinook to fall chum salmon monitoring is around August 20th. And we'll be using these in-river assessment monitoring projects along the migration route to determine if escapement will be achieved for the drainage-wide goal, as well as goals for the Tjingjik and the Canadian components, the Fishing Branch River and the Yukon River main stem at Eagle. That's all I have. Matt's going to cover the management strategies for the fall season.
Yeah, thanks, Bonnie. Again, this is Matt Olson, West Barb Fishing Game. So for fall management, we're just getting started, the initial fall season management actions have been announced and are in effect all the way up through District 3 in the Anoka River. And then those actions are to close fall chum and coho salmon fishing, the 4-inch gill nets for non-salmon fishing can be used from noon Thursday to noon Sunday, likely for the remainder of the season, again, to target non-salmon district-wide. And then there is the 6-inch opportunity, again, for non-salmon only, off the main stem river in the designated areas that are listed in the latest fall season advisory announcement. So if you're in the coast, or the coastal district, District 1, that would be fall season announcement number 1. In District 2, that'd be fall season advisory announcement number 2. And then District 3, it's advisory announcement number 3. We just announced the start of the fall season and those same management actions in 4A lower, 4A upper, and the Koyukuk, and 4B and C. So if you're in 4A lower, fall season starts at midnight on Wednesday, July 22nd. And 4A Upper and Koyukuk will start on midnight on Sunday, July 26th. And then in 4B and C, at midnight on Wednesday, July 29th. Upper River districts haven't been announced yet, but look for those announcements coming out here in about a week. So that's about all I got for fall season management right now. I guess we're going to wait and see to see how the fall chum run stacks up. We're looking at a little better run, you know, than we had last year right now, but it's still going to be highly unlikely that we're going to be able to fish in the main stem on it because we still aren't projecting to meet our Canadian treaty objectives, even with the run size within the game and goal range of 300,000 to 600,000. We'll look for opportunities potentially to fish in the tributaries that aren't going to Canada, but we'll look at all the genetic information and see how the run develops in order to find some opportunity there. Optimistic about the coho run, though, for this year. We're coming off a much better parent year in 2022 than last year's run. And so if survival stays the same as last year or similar, we could be looking at some harvestable surplus on coho later on in the season. But again, we're going to have to see that run develop before we announce those opportunities. So, yep, I think that's about it for me, but we'll be on the line to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Matt and Bonnie. Do we have any updates from the summer season managers?
Hi, yeah, thanks, Tarina. This is Dina. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Dina.
Hi, yeah, this is Dina Down with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I don't have a whole ton to add. Fall season's starting to kick off in the lower Yukon. If folks are in districts 4, 5, and 6, you still got the summer season management actions that have been announced in place or going into place as the King Salmon Run makes its way up to the U.S.-Canada border. The King Salmon Run, while coming in a little bit better than we projected at around 100,000, is still way below average, and we're unlikely to meet any escapement goals. And so just want to continue to encourage folks to release all those King Salmon alive if they see them, if they get them in any of their collective gear or even tangled in a 4-inch. It's really helpful to them if you can let them go alive so they can make it up to their spawning grounds and hopefully help bring these runs back stronger and better and faster. Summer chum salmon are making their way upriver as well. They do swim slower, and they mostly go to the Tanana River and below, so there's still those selective gear opportunities that will be in place or kicking off in the Tanana River to hopefully get some of those summer chum as they're getting to their spawning grounds. I just encourage folks to check your phone recordings or your radio announcements or your announcements to figure out what's going on, especially as we get through this transition period from the summer to fall seasons, and really thank everybody for all their participation in the summer season and all these conservation efforts that we're putting in for the salmon are really helping and hopefully really going to pay off in the future. With that, I'll turn it over to Fred if he's got anything to add for summer season assessment.
Yeah, this is Fred West. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I'm the summer season research biologist for the Fish and Game. And so for updated numbers, like Dina said, we're just over 1 million fish for summer chum. And as Bonnie said, we're well below the median of 1.5 million, but it is higher than it has been in the last, since 2019. And we will do a run reconstruction model to include harvest and escapement below the sonar, so that number may change. But anyway, it's encouraging that it's above a million. For Chinook, we're just over 100,000, and plus or minus about 17,000. And that's below the cumulative average of 158,000. So I guess it's below average, but it is encouraging that it's higher than recent years. For the ANVIC, we're currently at 228,096, plus or minus about 25 or 2,600 fish. That's below the cumulative median of 406,000, but that number is it is higher at Anvik than we have seen in recent years, which is good. And it's generally before when this kind of the switch happened with the amount of a number of chum that would go into the Anvik, you know, back in the day it used to be, you know, 40% to 50% of the contribution was from the Anvik, but in, I don't know, for the last 20 years or so, it's dropped to about 20%. So right now it's looking at about 20% or more of the contribution is from the Anvik. So anyway, yeah, they haven't had any issues with having to pull the sonar or anything. So that count is pretty good, and it's I suspect it'll keep going up. So that's encouraging. For the Chena, we are at a count of 925, which is below the average of 3,000. And for the Salta, we're at just over 1,000 at 1,062, and that's below the average of about 3,900. Or yeah, so both of those systems are below average, and it seems like the travel time is maybe a little bit slower this year so far because of the high water. So hopefully those numbers will increase. And for the Eagle sonar, as of today or yesterday, I guess we're at 8,173, which is below the average of just over 16,000. So, yeah. And so far that number is kind of tracking similar to, it's kind of coming in right now. It seems like it's going to be above forecast. We'll just have to see how it tracks out. But so far it's pretty encouraging, and we just would have hit the first quarter point, of that run. So, still early, but it is encouraging. The radio telemetry project is still ongoing. They are planning on tagging for at least another week. Those tags are all above the Rampart Rapids area. So, and going into Canada. But yeah, that project has about another week of tagging left. And yeah, I don't really have any more. There's no new updates on age composition. And then, as Bonnie mentioned, there's the third stratum of chum genetics. Yeah, that's all I got, but I'll stick around for questions. Thanks.
Thanks. Dina and Fred will now send over to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Do we have Keith Heron or Holly Carroll on the line?
Hi, Serena, and hi, everyone. This is Keith Heron with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I'm the assistant manager on the Yukon, and I don't have too much to add. Thank you, Bonnie, Matt, Dina, and Fred, for your updates. We also have published federal special actions with the same types of schedules that were described by ADF&G. So I'll just stand by it with any to hear if there's any questions from anyone. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Keith. We'll turn it over to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Do we have Adam or Jacqueline on the line?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Adam O'Dell here, senior fisheries biologist with Fisheries and Oceans Canada and Whitehorse. Jacqueline is absent today, so I'll just provide a management update on her behalf. But I'll proceed with stock assessment update. So we still have our crew in Old Crow running the Porcupine Sonar. This is just downstream of Old Crow, Yukon on the and this is a collaborative project with Funtech Gwich'in First Nation. The estimate to date for Chinook passage is 532 as of yesterday, July 20th. This is about a little over two times what we've seen to this date last year, where it was 233, however, still below the project average, which is just over 900. Now, Fred did provide an update at Eagle, so I don't need to get into that. We still have some staff on site there supporting that program and helping the delivery of it throughout the season. And I have a number of assessment updates I can provide that are Yukon First Nation on projects, but I'll just pause for a brief moment just in case some of those managers or individuals involved in those projects are online and they can provide the update, but I do have something prepared here in case they aren't. But I'll just give it a second here if there's any of them to speak. Okay, yeah, I'll proceed. So the Klondike River Sonar, this is run by Toronto Gwich'in First Nation in Dawson City. So this is right inside the town of Dawson City, essentially the river and the sonar site. We haven't had an update here in about a little over a week here, so the estimate is still the same as what I provided last week. They estimated 40 Chinook to be passed to pass the site as of July 12th. That compared with 26 on this day last year, the project average of 47, so still really early on in the season for that estimate. The Stewart River Sonar, this is run by First Nation of Natsunaik Dunn. It's in its first year of operation this year. They did deal with high water at the start of the year, which delayed deployment of the sonars, but thankfully everything is up and running as of July 20th. They have 212 Chinook past the site. The Pelly River Sonar, this is run by Selkirk First Nation near Pelly Crossing, Yukon. They've seen an estimated 351 Chinook pass as of July 20th. Similar, but a little bit higher than last year, where they had 307 on this date last year, but again, lower than the project average, which is 736. They were dealing with pretty high water early in the season and just running a single sonar for a period of time, but for the past week and a half or so, they've had both sonars running on the Pelly River. Lastly, the Nisutland sonar is up and running for the season. This is the furthest upstream assessment project that we have. They're still pretty early, and I mean, Chinook are just starting to reach there, but they have five Chinook estimated to pass the site as of July 19th. Again, early and really far upstream, but they didn't have last year's estimate was zero on this date, so it's kind of tracking about the same just in relation to the early season update that we have for that site. So that's the assessment update. I mean, I can provide now, as Bonnie provided an update on the in-season projection on fall chum based off the summer to fall chum relationship. And really in relation to the increase in summer chum that was observed this year. So conversely, we also have an update for our mainstem Yukon River chum salmon as well as fishing branch chum salmon. And these are just based off of some preseason determined components, I suppose, of the overall drainage estimate. So for the main stem component with that in-season projection in mind that Bonnie provided, the in-season update for the main stem Canadian Yukon River chum salmon is for about 47,000. And for Fishing Branch River, for nearly 19,000. So just as with the drainage wide and how the in-season projection is higher than the preseason forecast, these are proportionally that same amount higher than what the preseason forecasts were for these two sites. Sorry, just having an airplane flying overhead. So I can move into just a brief environmental conditions update now. So the Yukon River and most of its tributaries, they've started to see their seasonal reduction in flows following the spring runoff and the early summer rains that we were seeing. So the one notable exception is most of the southern lakes where they do continue to rise a little bit based off the glacier runoff that they're still experiencing. Now, nearly all the rivers in the territory, however, are within their historical or typical ranges. Now, at our site on the Porcupine, we're monitoring water level, and it did rise slightly over the weekend, but it's now dropping again, and nothing like we saw a couple of weeks ago where it rose about 10 feet. But it is dropping, and it seems to be a little bit higher than last week's season low that we saw on it. So we expect it to probably drop precipitously throughout the year with bumps here and there with precipitation. Water temperature is monitored in season at assessment sites throughout the territory. And so currently we have a few to go off of, and the water temperatures range from 17 degrees on the Sahelia River to 12 degrees on the Porcupine River. Then the Nisqually and Stewart Rivers both at 14 degrees Celsius. So currently, I mean, the forks, we're currently seeing pretty warm and dry weather. So even though the water temperatures are low, there has been some precipitation and the water temperatures do remain cooler. But we are expecting a bit of a drop in air temperature and also some increased precipitation here in the next few days. So we'll see how things continue. And also with that in mind, wildfire season has been pretty quiet here, thankfully. I think there's 20 territory-wide with maybe one of note just north of Mayo. But from what I can see, it isn't presenting any type of concern to the community. So a good piece of news there. Now, for the management components here, I have a brief update that Jackman provided that I can share. So it's the same essentially as last week's. There's no new management actions to report since last week. The preliminary low Canadian origin Chinook preseason forecast, it has increased, but we still don't expect to see the border passage amount exceed a 71,000 rebuilding target. And as such, public angling fisheries in Canada will remain closed, as well as current closures in the commercial and domestic fisheries. And we continue with our in-season intergovernmental meetings between Fisheries Nations Canada and Yukon First Nation government representatives, as well as the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee. We're a few weeks into the season now, and we'll have another one tomorrow to just information sharing on various assessment projects that are active, as well as other activities that are taking place and planned for the season. So that wraps up my update. I'll stick online here if there's any questions that pop up. Thanks.
Thank you, Adam. We will now move on to the organizational reports. Do I have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Do we have anyone from the BBAYK group online? How about CYFN? Yukon Salmon Subcommittee? I'll go ahead and provide a brief report for the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. We did have staff out in the field in the Tena drainage area. We don't have a full report, but they did do some surveys of salmon spawning streams and dropped a couple temperature loggers. I'll have staff online next week to provide any updates and any questions about the work that was completed in that area. Also,
Hi, Serena. Serena, this is Matthew from Yard Phone.
Oh, yes.
Hi, everyone.
Oh,
I'm a, Yeah, I'm a field technician, everyone, and I just wanted to give an update on the work we've been doing this summer. I just got back from that 10 days in the field doing culvert surveys and water sampling with my coworker, Jamie. And we were in the communities of Tanana, Selcha, Delta, and other areas in the Tanana River corridor. We assessed roughly 50 culverts and did water sampling in each area. In addition, we did drop a water temperature logger in the Selcha River to monitor those water temperatures for the rest of the season. While we haven't yet analyzed the data we collected in general, I can say that most of the culverts we assessed were in okay condition for fish passage. However, we did find a few culverts that were severely damaged and of concern as a fish barrier. Jamie and I will be heading back out to the gas district this August to continue assessing culverts, taking water samples, and dropping temperature loggers, and we will be compiling that data and our results and recommendations for potential restoration projects this fall. So thanks.
Great. Thank you, Matthew. We will now move on to Eva Burke, who serves on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, and she'll provide an update. Eva, are you online?
I am here. Hi, everyone.
Great. Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Serena, today you just wanted me to kind of give an update on some bycatch numbers, and then I have like five links that I need to send Mike to.
Yes, so what we can do is, you could provide that information and any kind of information you'd like to provide from the last council meeting. And once we post the recording of the teleconference online, we'll include those links too.
Okay. Wonderful. I'll start with just kind of a brief update of the last council meeting. One of the main issues that we were looking at was pelagic trawl and whether or not certain areas should be closed because pelagic gear is actually touching the bottom. And it was really interesting because in the meeting we learned that when they named the gear type midwater or pelagic gear, that they were trying to find a word that wasn't demersal or, near the bottom fishing. And so that's where the gear name came from. But in fact, pollock are demersal fish. And so catching them and the need to avoid salmon, which tend to be a little higher up in the water column, requires the gear type to be lower. So I think for me as a participant, there was a lot of that wasn't explicitly stated before, that yes, pelagic gear is in fact on the bottom. As far as how much of the time or how long, how much area is affected, that's not really known. And so they're continuing to do more studies, and there will be more information come available. So it was kind of just an initial review, initial discussion paper that folks had requested. And so it sounded like some of the crabbers were okay with some of the results moving forward, like continuing to be studied. And then I think it was easier for folks to wrap their mind around the issue knowing the history of the gear. So that issue continues to be in the queue at North Pacific, and I'll have to double check as far as the schedules when it's coming up again. Also at the North Pacific, a new thing that I think people in this room would be really interested in learning about is the new genetic group for the Yukon Chinook. So before we had like the middle upper Yukon Chinook reporting group for genetic reporting group. And now they have a Yukon Alaska and a Yukon Canada reporting group. And so they also mapped the 2025 Chinook bycatch of the Yukon River Chinook. And there's a hot spot. I sent a picture to Serena there's these hot spots of Yukon River Chinook that are being caught, like we said, from the traditional knowledge that folks have shared around the Pribilof Islands. And so where catcher processors had thought that they had clean fishing is really where the Yukon Chinook are. And so I think that's going to be an operational challenge moving forward. And there was a lot more of the coastal Western Alaska group. There was a lot more of the bycatch was Kuskokwim, Bristol Bay. And so as far as numbers, in 2025, in the A season, there was 623 Yukon Alaska Chinook and 431 Yukon Canada Chinook taken in the A season in 2025. But remember, 1 in 10 Chinook are sampled for genetics. So the confidence interval for, you know, 623 Alaska and Chinook would be a range of 440 to 962 Chinook. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. And I think that was the big thing that we can keep looking out for in the data is how much of the Yukon Chinook are being taken each year and where are they being taken. And it appear, you know, that we all know that a lot more Chinook are taken in the A season. And there tends to be two hot spots for Chinook. One is just northeast of Unimak, kind of one of the same areas as the Chum salmon bycatch. And then the other area, of course, is around the Pribilofs. And the question is, in the A season, is the higher amount of bycatch we see in the earlier weeks, is that because folks are just getting out on the fishing grounds and they're, you know, trying to get some fish going and because they're fishing, maybe they're, you know, fishing a little more, that's why they have higher bycatch? Or is there some type of feeding pattern, migration pattern that the Chinook are doing in the Pribilofs in the A season, early A season? I think the weeks I was looking at was like statistical week, like 6 to 11 or something, if I remember right, as far as kind of the highest, the time when the highest number of Chinook are taken. So I asked that to some folks, but they said that they don't know the answer to that. So I'll keep looking for that. And then there's a number of reports that are, as far as in season, I think the one that's easiest for folks is the new Alaska database that the state just made. And so as of July 2026 in the Bering Sea, all gear types, I believe, there was just almost 11,000 Chinook taken so far this year as of July 11th. And yeah, I think I'll share those links with Mike. And then, you know, as far as like participating in the council meeting, I think we'll continue to see more information about, you know, the timing of where the Yukon, timing and area of where the Yukon Chinook are being taken. And I think also that, you know, with the Chum bycatch action, there was a mandatory reporting requirement to YRDFA, the Fish Commission, AVCP, other groups, tribal organizations that, you know, our folks will be working with the different cooperatives to look at the bycatch data weekly so that we can also understand more about where our fish are being taken in the ocean. So that's something that is ongoing and newly developed. So there'll be more communications between our Yukon River folks and the pollock cooperatives as far as weekly reporting of salmon. I'm not too involved in that at the moment. I tend to be on the land in the summer, so being in meetings and looking at papers is not exactly what I'm working on at the moment. Another thing I think is important that I learned, thank you, Serena, for having the Yukon River Science Symposium each year. And one of the presentations in there showed that the ichneumonas was present in, of all the prey species that Chinook relies on, ichneumonas was only present in the pollock, and it was present in the pollock ovaries. Not in the juvenile pollock, which we know that the salmon feed on, the Chinook and Chum salmon feed on. So what role does the pollock play in Chinook diet in a changing climate? If you think about the ovaries, the eggs have a lot of protein, and in nature, some species go after the eggs because they know that they're going to get more bang for their buck as far as a protein source. And so is there... with ich being found in the pollock ovaries, one could say or, you know, assume that the discards being thrown off the catcher processors is one way that the Chinook could be ingesting those ovaries and contracting the ich. So I think it's important to understand that in this changing climate, when we know that the salmon are starving, what is their reliance on pollock, even if it's on pollock discards that are coming from a catcher vessel or catcher processor? So I think that's a question I keep wondering about and bringing up at the council is the food web dynamics and the reliance of both chum and chinook on pollock, and especially the reliance in a changing climate when other food sources are experiencing severe declines and not available. So I think, Serena, that's all I really had for reports. And then just know that I think every February at the council, there's a bycatch report. And then so people can kind of tune in and learn about all the different numbers and ask questions at that time.
Great. Thank you, Eva, for your report. I'm going to move on to the community level reports. Will you be on for the remainder of the call for any questions?
Yeah, I can hang around for sure.
Okay, great. We'll be starting with the community level reports. We'll be starting from the headwaters in Canada, since this is we're halfway through the teleconference season. So any community members from Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, Carmax, or Teslin? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line.
Hey, Serena, this is Jeffrey Peter in Old Crow.
Hi, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Some of it was covered already with Adam, but water's decent level right now and starting to drop. It's just going up and down based on rain, and currently it's hot right now, but supposed to be more rain later this week. And happy to hear that a bit more Chinook than expected coming through, but obviously not as high as we would like to see in the long run, but better than it was predicted, so happy for that. And there's a chief and council resolution for Wet'suwet'en First Nation to not have any nets in the river right now, so there's nobody fishing right now. There's not even for freshwater species right now. So you are allowed to fish on the Old Crow River, but I don't think anyone's been fishing on that tributary. So people just doing other stuff for the summer right now, and then hoping for some freshwater fishing in later on in August. But that's all from Old Crow. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Host from Canada online. Hello, this is Charlene Bent of Hostlia. I got distracted and missed time.
Oh, we haven't come to the Kaikuk River yet. We're starting our community level reports in Canada at the headwaters and coming on down.
Okay. I'll be waiting.
Good day. Okay. Stan Sr. here.
Hi, Stan. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'm Crow. Yeah, thanks, Jeffrey. That's a good update. Yeah, so I think it's not a complaint, but probably systematically for futures to look at the probably thrown drift net to see the condition of the fish and the salmon that's actually coming up here. And I think that would be beneficial to how we would look at the species and basically manage them in the future and see the condition of them. So that's probably the only one thing, but there's other than that, like Jeffrey said, the water is up and down, and it's good to see that number coming up, although we don't have a managed fishery in Porcupine, but to sustain the conservation of that species itself, I think, you know, doing what we can. Considering, you know, like looking at management again, but we're an isolated community, like most communities along the Yukon River and Alaska side, so we can definitely understand basically some of the situations you're going through in terms of having fish and not to fish, so, or salmon. Anyway, have a good day, and that's about it, I think, for now. Thank you, Adam, for bringing you an update on the scientific side of things. I see Joel. Have a nice day. Been listening in.
Thank you, Stanley. We'll do a last call in Canada for Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, Carmax, and Teslin. We'll go ahead and move into Alaska, District Y6. ABNC, Manly, Minto, Ninan, and Fairbanks.
Serena.
Yes.
This is Eva. I'll report on Ninan. We've been running a summer youth program, and we have young men from Rampart, Minto, Manly, Ninan. We've had folks from Canada come in, and we did apply for the culture and education permit and for our culture camp. And because there was a little bit more kings, and like somebody said, it's not where we want to be, but we really wanted, people had really wanted a taste, so we went ahead and fished, and we did get 10 kings in Ninan the week of the 13th through 17th. They were mostly the jacks, and they were in really, really good condition. Some of the best fish we've seen in a long time. The chum hadn't come yet, and there were just a couple white fish, and there was a couple females in there, which is like hard when you're catching the fish to see those. And a couple of the hearts did have ichnophonus, but the meat and everything was fine, so we didn't, that was a good sign. And then we're not gonna mess with the nets anymore, and we're gonna run the manned fish wheel for our culture camp too, because we didn't get any summer chums yet. So they're just getting into our waters right now. So we think it's important to do a little bit of fishing and share with the community, but it's good to do a little fishing and look at the health of the fish from our perspective in the community as well. So I think as somebody who really supports a full moratorium, I've been on the fence of thinking about if we don't fish a little bit, then we don't know how they're doing. So I have a lot of mixed feelings about it. But yeah, thank you for the opportunity to share.
Great. Thank you, Eva. We'll continue with District Y6, Manly, Minto, Ninan, and Fairbanks.
This is Virgil in Fairbanks.
Hi, Virgil. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been checking the numbers, and I checked them again this morning. Even though at the sonar they've got 103,000 fish facet, the Chin and the Sausa don't really have that many, less than a third of the average been counted in both of those rivers. And on the chums, though, there's more chums. It's have been showing up on the Chena and the Salsa. But, so it's hard to say what it's going to be. Another week ought to tell, though, as far as whether the fish are making it up here or not. But that's about all I've got to say. Eva pretty much covered everything else.
Great. Thank you, Virgil. We'll ask Paul for District Y6, Manly, Mintone, Nana, and Fairbanks.
Victor.
Hi, Victor.
Thank you for a good report and good there from Virgil. Yes, I do believe I did taste some Tana River fish last week or so ago, and it was just great to have a good bite of fish from home. Very little, but it was good. Thank you very much. And a little bit of activity on the river lately. It was good to see. Last few years been pretty quiet. Anyways, moving a lot better this year.
Is it off?
Great. Thank you, Victor. We'll move into District Y5, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chalkeetsuk, Vinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line.
Hi, Serena. This is Carlissa.
Hi, Carlissa.
Hi, everyone. I'm the surveyor here in Fort Yukon. I surveyed 5 families, 2 of them who are fishing, and they said they've been catching pike and some whitefish and with a 6-inch net. The water's high. We've been having rain. And, yeah, that's all my report. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And calling on District 5, Y5, C&D. We'll move into District Y5A and B, Tana, Tana Rapids, Rampart, Yukon River Bridge. We do have a report from Stans Ray at the Rapids. He says water has dropped considerably and drift is gone. Water temp pretty cold at 60 degrees Fahrenheit today on the surface. And as of this morning, there are 3 fish camps from the Tana to above Rampart Rapids. Although Tana is running a large spirit camp for young people, he expects less camp life in the days to come, and only a few summer chums were caught in the 4-inch net just before closure, and there are no signs of them in any spawning creeks yet. Again, calling on District Y5 A and B, Tana, Tana Rapids, Rampart, and Yukon River Bridge.
Serena, this is Virgil. I'm going to ship out. Oh. Ann and I is going to get 2,500 and something sockeye salmon brought there tomorrow. And then there'll be a little over 1,000 going up on the Koyukuk to, dang it, to Hughes tomorrow on rights. But if anyone on here know someone at either place, they could give them a call and let them know that fish is going to be there tomorrow. It'll be in 50-pound boxes. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Virgil. We will move onto the Keokuk River. Do we have anyone from Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Latner, Bettles online?
Hello, this is Charlene Bent from Huslia.
Hi, Charlene. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Oh, okay. We still don't have surveys done, but there is people fishing. I know some people are going down to Dalby for whitefish, and Culture Camp is this week, and I believe they have a permit. So I don't know if they caught anything yet. But there is people fishing. I just they don't want to participate in surveys. So that's all I got.
Great, thank you, Charlene. Again, calling on the Keokuk River communities of Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Latna, and Bettles. We'll move on to District Y4A, Anbit, Grayling, Caltag, Nalato, and Keokuk. Again, calling on District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Caltag, Nalato, or Keokuk. We'll move into District Y4A and C, Ruby and Galena.
Hello, Serena. It's Robert.
Hey, Robert. Go ahead.
Thank you. We have a tribal fish wheel here in Anvik now, and we've been using that. We went to the state, and we had to change our webbing out from wire to a seine net. It's called a friendly fish wheel. So, and we did have it running, and we manned it. And we did catch a lot of salmon, but a lot of them were put back into the river. But most of it was kept with the jack salmon. And seemed like all these were fall chums. I got 10. Everybody got 10 and 5 jack salmon or more. And this is the first time I ever seen the smokehouses smoking in 5 years. I was just amazed, and people are so happy they're having fish. They're eating fish like they never ate fish before. But anyway, yes, I mean, I was taken back by all this. And this is really good because I think that people have fish now for the winter, and we still haven't have it manned yet for more fall chum to pass out. So, and I'm just looking at how we're going to do this for 52 weeks for the year when we're supposed to eat fish every Friday and Advent and Lent. So I think this is something that really will work into our religious system also. Okay, thank you, Serena.
Great. Thank you, Robert. Calling on District 54A and C, Galena and Ruby.
Hey, Serena, this is Keith Heron with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Can I ask a question?
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Hey, Robert, this question's for you. And I just wanted to clarify something because all king salmon, even the jacks, are closed for harvest, and I just wanted to let you know that. But did you mean jacks as in kings, or are you calling chum salmon a different name I'm not aware of?
No, I'm not. Serena, may I, please?
Yes, go ahead, Robert.
What we're doing, I mean, it's been a long 5 years since anybody had salmon. And if you look at the salmon that we caught, the jacks, they have no sperm bed and they didn't have any eggs in them. So some of the elder ordered me colomorphidates. I'm not too sure, but we kept all those. I mean, and then the fall chums we had are bright. They're between 9 and 12 pound fall chums. I know what a fall chum is. I was a commercial fisherman here for 20 years. So, and that's what we kept. So, I mean, if there is going to be some kind of a ramification against our tribe, you know, I mean, hey, you know, go for it because we have our fish. And I know this is not, you know, we never caught more than anything than we didn't, just what we needed, that's all. And, you know, if you want to ask questions more, go ahead. Thank you. Thank you, Serena.
Thank you for that clarification, Robert. Yeah, this is Keith Heron with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I just wanted to make sure everyone on the call knew that our current management actions for Chinook or king salmon, we do have closures in place. We are excited about the 100,000 or so past pilot stations. We're still not seeing very good runs at our upper river escapement projects. So there is some hope, but I just wanted to make it clear that we don't think the current run does support harvest, and we really need to make sure as many of those kings that are in the river are able to go spawn, and we have to protect them now, so hopefully they come back better in 5-6 years from now. I just wanted to make that really clear. Thank you.
Serena, it's Robert.
Yes, go ahead, Robert.
Yes, we understand that. And one of the things that listened to Eve Burke's report on incidental catches with our Chinook salmon on the high seas and also what goes on in False Pass, I mean, you never ever address that to a fact where they have to give up portions of their fisheries too to make our fisheries work. Ours is for food, theirs for money and profit. So there is a factor here that we look at. I mean, the Canadian First Nation want fish too, but I'm not going to get into a lengthy discussion. Maybe you can come to our RAF meeting this fall and we can talk about it, okay? Thank you, Serena.
And hi, yeah, this is Dina John with Fishing Game. I do want to also echo Keith's sentiments and remind folks to let those things go alive. Even if they are jacked salmon, they are going up to those spawning tributaries, and they also help to, you know, feed the animals and the, you know, the people and the animals and the environment of the streams that they are going to. And those jacked salmon can contribute genetics to the next generation. They often call them sneaker males because they can kind of maybe sneak in and breed and pass on their genetics. And you don't necessarily get jacked salmon just from having a jack salmon father. So those little fish can contribute quite a lot to the run, and it's important that they get back up to the spawning streams where they're going so they can help to feed the environment of back up to wherever it is they're supposed to get destined and go to.
Yes, I hear you. We hear you. But just like I said, there's so many happy people here just to have fish compared to what they have out in high season and for profit. Thank you.
No, and I very much appreciate that, and I'm glad you guys are able to get a lot of chum, and yeah, I hope that will really help out with the go through end of the winter.
Thank you for the discussion. We'll move on to District Y3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, Shagluk. Is there anyone online? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move on to District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Station, and Marshall. Hi, David, go ahead.
Yeah, there's no fishing down here. Well, I went out, I was probably one of the only ones, went out a couple times, and I got about 20 in the evening, but they're mostly black. Black spawned out chums. I kept about 10. They were pretty silver, yeah, there. One of them was a big red male. Yeah, I could see where what Robert said. There was some fall chum already, so I know I caught a couple of those. Yeah, we never caught enough to cut, but the rest of it spawned out fish I gave saving for the dogs. We just cut the good ones up and froze them. But yeah, I really am happy for Anvik there to get them what they need. And I know Holy Cross never got what they need for 6-7 years now. So, and the water is slowly dropping. Little or no debris or in the water, so yeah, it's been pretty quiet here for us fishing, so that's all I got to report.
Thank you, David. Again, calling on District Y3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, and Chagluk. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Move on to District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Station, and Marshall.
Serena?
Yes.
Hi, this is Sven here.
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, I was traveling in Anchorage when they announced the opening, Dipnet opening for chums here in Y2, so I didn't get to go out myself until the 4th of July. We went out several hours. We had to throw two chums back due to scars, and my wife was processing some of them. We ended up getting rid of two more because of the pus we found in the flesh. I wasn't able to check for ichthyophonus in the heart or any form. We were getting right on the river. But we were able to put away some fish this summer, so looks like a lot of people's smoke hoses were burning smoke, burning wood.
Great. Thank you for that report. Again, calling on District Y2, Mountain Village, and St. Mary's Pilot Station in Marshall. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute.
Hi, Serena.
Hi, Anita. Go ahead.
Hi. Seems like nobody's been really going out dip netting since the last opening. I don't think nobody's doing pouring nets off from the tributaries. But everybody's thankful for the fish they got, and there's no drift in the river. The water's so high. And people are just getting rid of the berries. The berries out here were so hard a couple of days ago. So it should be softening up by now, so that's about it.
Great. Thank you, Nita. Then calling on District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's Pilot Station in Marshall. Move on to District Y1, Nunam, Lognak, Imanak, and Kotlik.
Hi, Serena. This is Marvin.
Hi, Marvin. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Lots of rain this past week and a half or so. Haven't heard of, since the closure, I haven't heard of anyone going out. Besides yesterday, my boy went rodding with his cousins. He lost a sea fish. That's all I know. I didn't even ask if they or seven caught up in Clearwater River here, up past the Lick River. So, not too much else to report here. Just tidal influences here. We've been getting like 4.5 foot tides, 5 foot tides, surges, and when it drops, it goes down to zero. But the water further up the Yukon is still high, going up, coming down the Middlemouth and near Old Hamilton before it spits off out to the other sloughs down here near Kotlik. So, and still debris coming down. And like Nita said, waiting on berry to ripen up. So whenever the sun decides to finally come out, we'll be out there picking berries instead of worrying about the river for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Marvin. Again, calling on District Y1, Nunam, Lognak, Imanak, and Kotlik. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute. We'll move on to the coastal communities of Chivac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. We'll go ahead and open up the floor for any questions or comments.
Serena?
Yes, go ahead, Eva.
Hi. I have a question. Is Dina and Keith still on?
Yes,
this is
Keith.
Yes,
okay.
Because I've been thinking about something too, because I was looking back at historical numbers. Like when we tell people, you know, we shouldn't be fishing, we need every fish, you know, 100,000 fish. Like, can you put that into perspective historically? Because I feel like what we really need to see is like a 250,000 fish. And then historically, what we used to have is like 500,000 fish. And then of course, this is all data that happened to be taken after we started commercially harvesting on the river. So could you share a little bit more about that so people kind of understand that where we're at and where we need to be? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Eva. This is Dina Fishing Game, and I'll just kind of talk generally. I'm not in front of a computer, so I don't have any numbers in front of me. But one thing to keep in mind is that right now the border passage objective into Canada is 71,000 fish. And so if you think that Canadian origin needs to make up, you know, it makes up about 40% of the run. So even if they made up about half the run, we still need about 150,000 fish at pilot to even have a run that's large enough of kind of having a chance of meeting that border passage objective. And at 100,000 fish, we're not close to that. We're not going to meet the Canadian goal, and it's kind of unlikely that we're going to meet our other goals in Alaska. You know, we used to have runs that were above 150,000 or above 300,000. And we used to meet a lot of goals back in those years. And so while 100,000 is good, it's not good enough.
Yeah, this is Virgil. I want to say something about this. And that is, you got to remember that these numbers right now have not supposedly been fished on. When the numbers were fished on and when the quota for the lower Yukon was up to 120,000 in the commercial fishery and they could subsistence fish 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and then in the upper Yukon, we weren't allowed near as many fish, but people still caught a hell of a lot of fish. We had a commercial fishery, and we up here never fished more. We always fished, most of the time we fished 2 48-hour periods a week or less. In the Tanana River, it was 2 42-hour periods a week. But, and then, anyway, so what gets counted at the sonar, which you would have to get it in perspective, we used to have around 350,000 damn fish, teens alone, come up the Yukon River in the 80s and the early 90s. Now with 100,000, that might sound like a lot to some people, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to what we used to have, and we're not going to get nowhere near the excitement in the Chena and the South are the only places they really get counted, other than Pilot Station, until they get into the border on Canada, we're not going to get nowhere near what we used to get, even with fishing on them. And we're not fishing on them now. And so, and that agreement with Canada, we have to get 72,000 on the spawning grounds, is what it means, on the spawning grounds. And so I just wanted to throw that in there. Unless you've been involved in this for as many years as I have, you don't really understand that. But it's important. And I know that it makes me as mad as anyone else madder to know that RAM is catching them and not even reporting them. But they're doing it because there's no troopers, no enforcement, zero enforcement out there. But anyway, that's what I've got to say about it. So we need to do the best we can. That's all we can do. Thanks.
Victor,
yes,
I was just wondering, has anybody, you got so far off from the Pribilof Islands, it's 3 miles the state management, you got to study, check where the fish are coming from, how much from Yukon, or outside that 3 mile limit, the federal government have any kind of NOAA or anybody have any kind of study estimating where fish are coming through? Identified.
This is Jude Hensler.
Yes, go ahead, Jude.
About when statehood started, the number was estimated at roughly 300,000 Chinook on a regular basis. And the Rampart Dam report estimated that the ratio of Canadian salmon Chinook to the Alaska run was 50%. You can look that up. And I saw and heard biologists from the from that Rampart Dam study estimate that the Canadian stock was between 60% and 80% of the run. So that's what we're looking at. That's what we looked at back in the day. And the other, one other thing is that Eve reported some ratios that are present now. That's a depleted run, that Yukon run. So I don't know what the ratio should be or was, but it's not something that they should make policy on based on that ratio that they're giving us now. That's all I got to say. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The floor is open for any questions or comments. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute and mute your phone.
Yeah, hi, Serena. This is David again, Holy Cross.
Yes, David, go ahead.
Say, I was going to give a little more detail on my dipping. I was in only 10 feet of water, and I know the thing's running about 15 or 20 feet of water.
Are you sorry, dogs, that I may need?
Okay, hello? Someone's running. Please mute your phone. Thank you.
And when I was, my last dip, I was, well, when I first started dipping, you know, maybe I'm kind of, you might think I'm goofy, but I always say, here, fishy, fishy. And I start catching, and my last dip, I prayed to the Lord to give me one silver dog salmon, and lo and behold, I caught one silver dog salmon. That was my second to the last drift. Not drift, but dip. So I'll commit the First Amendment, but I prayed I catch a king. I didn't catch that king. It was only in 10 feet of water, but well, I was tempted, and you could call me a tempted and illegal fish, but I wouldn't feel guilty if I catch one, because if they're allowed to kill and release 11,000 fish in the ocean, then why should I feel guilty for one? I commend Robert Mandic and Courageous to give an honest report. And as Native people that have been along this river for 10,000 years, we shouldn't feel guilty about fishing. The only time problem we start having with fish was when commercials started. commercial salmon, that's when they start having problems. It's money over poor people. I could see it, you know, for years. And
hey, good day.
Thank you. That's all I got to comment.
Serena.
Yes, thank you, David. Sorry about the background noise there. We had to mute a few people. Someone
Serena,
else?
Stan here.
Yes, Stan, go ahead.
Serena, thank you for all the years that you put in there and listening to everyone for the concerns with the salmon coming up the river. You're doing a pretty good job. Just want to say thanks. Keep up the good work. You know, you need support sometimes. So that's good. And then I like what Virgil had to say, putting it out there. In terms of what's happening in the area, you know. And there's, you know, like no reporting of that. So the next question in terms of management is what can we do about that? You know, what can we do to make that happen? The report at least start there and then move forward. We don't have to get into the long history of it. And, you know, is the next step is this action. How do we actually do something about that so we can have salmon coming up the river, which is the goal, so they can reach their spawning grounds. And then hopefully we can do that. Thank you very much, and you have a good day.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate your compliments, but it's not all my doing. There's a lot of people on the river out there doing really great work, and for all those people that are doing their due diligence and participating, it's...
Serena, this is Virgil. Can I interrupt for a
second? Yeah, go ahead, Virgil.
Okay, the Fairbanks AC is going to meet at 6 o'clock tonight. It'll be a Zoom meeting, but the reason for it is to do that. We have to, because of the new Attorney General throwing out what we got passed, restricting Area M, at the board meeting in February, we are meeting tonight to discuss and vote on submitting agenda change requests to the Board of Fish to readdress Area M. And so to restrict them so they can't fish the way they fish and quit catching so many of the fish headed up our way. And so that's the only thing we can do, and we are going to do that tonight. And if someone on the from the department could maybe, I don't know how we're going to do this, but Serena can figure it out. Anyway, get the word out. Anyone that wants to can listen in on our meeting tonight, and it starts at 6 o'clock. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Virgil. I usually get notifications of your guys' meeting. I have not come across the one for this evening, so if someone can email me the link, we can share it out there on our social media and our website.
Gail could do that, Serena.
Okay, I'll go ahead and reach out to her.
Yeah, Gail, have Gail email you the link, and then you can send it out to people.
Okay, thanks, Virgil. Again, the floor is open for any comments or questions. Okay, hearing none, I'd just like to give a brief announcement about our newsletter. It is in digital format. It will not be printed. We do not have funding to print our newsletters until we get our funding from the R&M grant. So if you are interested in the issue, it is fresh off the press and should be available on our website, and it was shared out on our Facebook account. Thank you guys for joining in on the call today. Great to hear all the conversations and great dialogue. We'll talk with you next week. Klayan Juknap, and enjoy the rest of the week.
Thank you, Serena.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Serena. Have a good day.